Hey, hello, this is NLA News. We've got a special guest here from Redoubt News. It is Lauren Pierce. He is here to interview John DeRash and Gerard Aprea from National Liberty Alliance. And also we've got Terry Moore, Colorado Director. They're going to be discussing a little bit about people's common law grand juries and the latest updates on the National Liberty Alliance, what we've got going. Well, I want to welcome Lauren Pierce to the NLA News Channel. So take it away, Lauren. You have the con. Take it away.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your program. I am fairly new to this in the sense that I haven't been associated with Redoubt News that long. How this all got started for me, just to give some more background and by way of introductions, is I was living in Cedar City, Utah back in 2014. And it came to my attention, as well as many other people in Utah, especially in southern Utah, about what was happening in Bunkerville, Nevada. So several of us just spontaneously, without any pre-planning, we jumped in our vehicles to go down there and see what was going on. Some of us got there, earlier, others got there later. But it was right, I personally got there after the actual event that happened, in the wash, as they call it, the wash underneath the overpass. I was there to observe and to see firsthand what was going on, and I was able to see firsthand the abuses that were happening from the BLM. I had a chance to briefly talk with Ammon Bundy and got his side of the story, and from there, things just kind of grew as I became more and more familiar with all of the circumstances surrounding that. And then, the whole thing with the Malheur Wildlife Refuge happened, and they arrested them following that, and the murder of Lavoie Finicum, which led me to create a Facebook page called Court Watchers for Constitution Originalists. At the time, I was thinking, definition of an originalist is somebody like Scalia, Supreme Court Justice Scalia. But it's really anybody who's read the Federalist Papers and has gone back and really tried to dig out what the original intent of the founders were, the framers, when they put together the Constitution. It took a long time before they finally could agree on something and get it ratified. But that's what I was going after, and I really wanted to kind of focus on what was happening with the Bundys and their supporters and defendants. Things led from that to where I started writing for Redoubt News for Sherry Duvall, and that's where I am today. I really did not have much background or knowledge of the National Liberty Alliance until I was contacted by Ollie Smith, and I've had a chance to briefly go on to your website and take a look at some of the information that's there, and found it very interesting. And so I'll probably be asking a lot of questions because, like I say, I'm still fairly new to what your guys are all about, and hopefully you'll be able to inform me as well as anybody else that's listening to this broadcast or this recording.
Yes,
So.
I haven't talked to Sherry for quite a while. There for a while, well, right after my year, I was talking to her quite a bit. And Redoubt News, Sherry has put out some very accurate articles, and that's why I want to get Redoubt News associated with our NLA News Channel. Like I say, we're just in the starting stages. I'm just now getting everything together, but you go ahead, Lauren, and we'll see what happens here. Go ahead.
Okay, well, let me start by some of the things that we talked about earlier when we first were meeting each other over the phone, and that is this whole issue of what's known as the common law sovereign citizen movement. And there's a lot of different ideas about what that actually means. I mean, when people think of sovereign citizen, they tend to think of Randy Weaver and, Rudy Ridge. A lot of people who are in what we call, I think for want of a better word, the Patriot movement or the Patriot community, they get, when they hear the words common law or sovereign citizen or admiralty court or gold fringe flag, it tends to turn them off and tune out. And so what I wanted to first to do is approach that whole concept and either, let you have the opportunity to defend it and or set me straight on it or, sort out what the error is from the truth and that kind of thing. So that's kind of where I'd like to start.
Well, yeah, maybe I can. Well, go ahead, Dredd.
I think that we should give a short introduction of who we are, because a lot of the people out there really don't know who we are, how we got started in the Committee Man movement and then moved into the courts, John and I, because early on we were doing the Committee Man and we saw how the system was turned on its head, and we took the Board of Elections to court and went all the way up to the appellate court. And at that point, we realized that the courts were like so out of whack that we realized that in order to take this country back, we have to take the courts back. And the judges were a big part of it, but the whole court system is bad. Now, as far as a sovereign citizen goes, I'm going to let John talk because he'll do good on this. But I don't even know, they use that term loosely. I don't even know how you become one. I've never seen a membership card. It's a catch-all phrase that law enforcement is using. Yeah. They call everybody a sovereign citizen is an oxymoron, because you can't be sovereign and be a citizen of the United States. Because if you're a citizen, that means you're a citizen of Washington, D.C., and so then you're not sovereign. And if you're not sovereign, then you're a slave. So just getting that through there real quick. I don't.
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of Well, go ahead, finish that up, and I'll.
Well, anybody that uses that sovereign citizen thing, it tells me right away that they don't know the issues and they're just looking for a catch-all phrase. But go ahead, John.
Yeah. Remember, our founding fathers used the word citizen also. But the idea of a citizen comes really from a statutory process or a statutory country or however you want to put that, out there. There is a lot of misconceptions of what we are doing compared to what a lot of other people have tried to do. And really there's a lot of misinformation out there, and people are running with ideas that really, is really giving the elite or the individuals involved with this, really empowering the, the status quo per se. The courts have become unjust. We haven't found a just court in New York yet. We're in the federal courts, and we haven't found a just court there yet either. They really are really serving corporatism, the corporation, corporate America, and the Federal Reserve. That's what they're really serving. And anybody that comes up against the establishment is beat down quite hard in the courts. There is that phrase, the sovereign citizen. When we were interviewed by the FBI on a couple of occasions, the first question they asked us if we were sovereign citizens, because they have lumped everyone together, as Gerard had said. But this idea of a sovereign citizen, or these ideas of using certain words or removing yourself from the system, doing all this paperwork and not having a driver's license and all that stuff, really is just it giving them power, or just acknowledging that they are in control. The truth of the matter is that we're up against an elite group of people who have worked on seizing this country from the very beginning, even when the Federalist Papers, the Federalist Papers during that debate, you can find that the enemy was already in the camp. And over time, they've developed this idea of a municipality, which created a small country inside Washington, D.C. Now, of course, that sounds very strange, but that is exactly what the Organic Act of 1871, I think it was. And from there, they started to construct a statutory prison for people. We're all in a statutory prison because you can't do this or you can't do that or you can't do the other thing. You get a fine for this or a fine for that. They have taken control of the behavior of the people. And that's what a controlling country does. A country controlled by, in our case, we have a problem. We're controlled by the elite. They control our legislature in Washington. They have controlled the president. They didn't look like they've been able to control this president, President Trump at this point. But they've controlled the whole process. The special interest groups have funded a lot of these people who are in office, and in return, they get their will done. So these people are going into Washington doing the will of the elite or the will of corporate America and not the people, which the people, of course, were the ones who sent them there. But anyway, get back to this idea of names and stuff. A lot of people think if you use certain language that they've used in the statutory in building all these statutes to try to remove themselves from that, really feeds into empowers them. We take the other approach. We come call ourselves we the people, which is who and what we are. We have membership of people who have come together across the entire nation from every state of this union. We've established a unified state grand jury in every state, and the state grand juries came together and established a unified United States common law grand jury. So we as one accord, over 6,000 members or people coming together to establish a grand jury on a national level to go into the federal courts for the sole purpose of dealing with subversion against the United States of America, against the people, against the Constitution by enemies, both foreign and domestic. And so that's what we're doing, is going into the courts.
Excuse me, just a minute, John. I've got somebody banging and clanging. Somebody needs to mute themselves. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, and so they've I lost my train of thought. Where was I? anyway, we're in the courts and we're trying to establish the fraud, because that's what we call it. We don't go and, make certain statements of who we are, what we are. We don't go and remove ourselves from the system. We don't get rid of our driver's licenses. I mean, all these things you need to use to some degree in order to get through the process. You need a Social Security number. You need a driver's license. They've abused that whole system, and of course, a driver's license really is only for commercial use, not for the regular driver. But of course, you're only looking for trouble if you try to drive without a driver's license. So you might as well get one until we can fix the system, try to keep yourself out of jail so we can fight this this process. But nevertheless, the bottom line really is that this is fraud. And that's how we see it. We call it for what it is. So whenever we meet resistance in the court now, we immediately bring it to that fraud, get it into the statements, into the record, and push forward the process. We've opened a court case here in New York, up in Albany. That's the Northern District, court system. We're establishing, goodness, we probably have about 100 cases going into this thing. We are pursuing on a criminal level. We've made a connection with the president. We've been copying him for quite some time. Even before he became elected, he was interested in what we were doing. So we've been copying him for quite some time. We started copying Jeff Sessions recently, about a month ago. We haven't heard back from him yet. And we're about ready to follow up with a second letter to him, because he's supposed to be the law enforcer. And he believes in the law, so says he, so says the president. And we're going to hold their feet to the fire on that. So we're pursuing everything that is going on, really. We're putting it on the record. And you can find that record up on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight the grand jury and click on docket. And then you will find all of the paperwork that we have filed in the courts. We filed a tremendous amount already. We've got a lot more going on. We're also helping people out with mortgage problems, these non-judicial foreclosures or non-judicial tax foreclosures, mortgage foreclosures or tax foreclosures. Both of them are illegal. And so we're working with that in our court case. We're also working with habeas corpuses, where we've got about 30 of them out there where people are unjustly incarcerated. Working to try to get them out of prison through a habeas corpus, which the courts have been ignoring. We're now going to be feeding that into our court case. We've got up against the New York State you know, the gun laws of New York State, the SAFE Act particularly, but we went after all the gun laws. We filed papers against the governor and both houses, and they have defaulted. Matter of fact, we've just written up the default papers to go in. So there's a lot going on in what we're doing. We're doing something. We're using the system that belongs to we the people. We're ignoring all of the statutory processes that don't belong in a common law setting. And we're not using their language in order to separate ourselves as, you know, we're sovereign this or and they're, you know, that, whatever names are used in that process. We're just going in with the truth as we the people against those who are, you know, subversive against our system, particularly in the judiciary, but also in all branches of government. I don't know if you want to add to that.
Well, yeah, thank you. That was a great explanation and provides a lot of background. What I think is the pressing question, you know, you use the word bottom line, so let me go to the bottom line. The pressing question for me and I think a lot of other people is you referred to the elite, and they've been around and been pulling the strings probably since day one, since I think you said right. Even back when you were putting together the
right. Constitution. They had total control of England way back. Yeah.
So the elite have been around since probably, you know, time immemorial, and they're always elite around. Some people refer to them as psychopaths. They have different names right. and different, you know, personality traits, but they've been around for a long time. So my question is this, you know, how do we, the people, if we want to call it that, who are basically people who are looking for the truth or looking for to, you know, life, liberty and the pursuit of happiness and aren't looking out to hurt our neighbor or hurt our fellow man. How do we go up against this elite? Because they are not going to give up their power easily. And they have spent the last 240 years building a huge, monstrous power base.
Right.
That's well, almost impenetrable. And so my question is, that's my bottom line question. How do we get them to give up? Because, you know, you talked about filing all these motions and work within the system, which is great. But if the elite are controlling everything, why do they even have to give you the time of day? Why do they even have
to pay attention? we have taken over the court. We don't have a judge in our court. We really have a magistrate. Matter of fact, he is a magistrate and not a judge. So that's the guy they gave us. Originally, we had a judge, and they changed him over to a magistrate. We've laid down the process of a common law court, and they so far had adhered to it. This judge has been very silent, hasn't made any decisions, although he's been asked to make decisions by the enemy, of course, through letters. They don't file these papers. They put them in letters and try to get rid of us for no standing and all the other things that they use. But this judge has not responded to those things. Time has gone by. We're now filing defaults. We're going to see now where he's going to go with defaults because, look, now he's got to follow the letter of the law. His flesh is on the line here. You know, we've filed defaults. These people have defaulted. And it would be – it's against the law. It's against the process, the rules, everything for this judge to ignore the procedure. So we're going to see what happens with that. We're also copying this to Congress, a couple of people in Congress, Trey Gowdy, what's the other guy's name, Gerard? There's three of them.
Jason Chavez.
Chavez, and there's a third one who runs the Judiciary Committee, I believe. I forget his name. But anyway, we're copying those three individuals. We're copying Jeff Sessions, and, of course, we're copying the president. We're also going to go down hard on Jeff Sessions on our next paper and do a show cause on him, why he isn't responding and doing what needs to be done. If and when the president feels that he can do what's necessary to kind of empower us by pressing the issue with Jeff Sessions, which he needs to do at some point sooner or later, that in itself would empower us in the courts and move the process. We've told Jeff Sessions that we need common law prosecutors here in New York. And we've talked to him about, you know, the suppression the subversion, suppression of the people and the subversion. So he's very much aware of it. So that's one way we can get empowered. The other way, of course, is critical mass. At some point, they just can't ignore us. But the key thing in the courts, especially the federal courts, is the judges are very careful in their language, what they do and what they say. And we've discovered a few things concerning their processes, usually what's used in what's a process called INREM, I-N-R-E-M, which the, you know, the IRS uses that, tax foreclosures uses that, and even mortgage companies are using that in order to take people's property and go after people criminally. And so we understand how it has been written into the rules of the court, and we're using that against them by exposing it. There are certain things they just can't there is a certain scam that they got going on, and they give you like 15 days to respond, and then they write it into the rules. If you don't respond in 15 days, then you don't have the option to, you know, deny or go or bring the issue up anymore. And so we go right away to that process. We put the judge into a situation where his flesh gets on the line, you know, it becomes personal now, because now he's going to become part of an open conspiracy. And with that, we have found a little bit of success in a few cases that we have taken, one against the IRS and the federal courts, which closed down very quickly as soon as we started moving down that road. And now we're using that in this court case now, where we've already laid that out. We have about 10 or 12 memorandums, which lays out all the processes by which we are following and going into these courts, and by what rules and what authority we come into the court with, the rules of common law, and the authority we're coming in with as the people, we the people, under the name of the grand jury, which is the sureties of peace.
John?
Yeah.
I think something bears explaining here that you kind of touched, but you didn't really say it. When we started this panel, oh, excuse me, somebody's at the door.
Well, we'll wait for Gerard to come back. You got another question while we're waiting, or about anything that I've brought up?
I think one of the key words that you said, I keep going back to, you know, the basics here, which is how do we take this power away from these corrupt elite? And because, like you said earlier, and I totally agree with you, the courts are a mess. The courts are corrupt. They serve themselves. I witnessed it firsthand in Las Vegas. I mean, you had to be there in the courtroom to actually see it with your own eyes and hear it with your own ears.
We're going after that judge with a show cause. And let me just touch on something a little more on this point here. You know, look, at once we get one indictment that sticks on a judge and or a clerk or any of these elected or appointed individuals, all we need is one to start that process inside our case. You see, they have a big problem because we're not coming in with just one case where they turn around and say, I can say we don't have no standing or we don't have this. We do writs of errors anyway, ignore them and continue to move. And they don't know what to do when we do that because it is part of the process. And then we'll do an overruling on them because, look, at in a court of record, a judge has no authority to make any decisions. A court of record is a court decided by the people. You know, it's by the tribunal. The tribunal, of course, is the trial jury, which are 12 individuals. We're coming in as the people. We, the people, the sureties of the peace under the name of the grand jury. And we're coming in at the thousands. We've got thousands of people who are involved in this. So it's not just a couple of people to begin with. But all we need is one indictment, which empowers this court case. And we will do the indictment inside this court case. Right. And once that is accomplished inside this court case, we have so many criminal things going on that we have brought into this court case. Again, we have over 100 cases going into this case. You know, you can't just throw 100 cases out. It is something that's extraordinary. It's not normally done. I don't know that it's ever been done, but the process doesn't not permit it. And
let me go back to your statement that you just made about getting one indictment. How do you go about doing that? I mean, let's say the current de facto system who hates you and hates your indictment says, no, we're not going to let the grand jury convene. You're not going to be able to get anywhere with them. There's not going to be any traction. How do you get around that? How do you actually get an indictment?
The man has got to get up.
Something.
Let me just finish that question and then you can take the job. A man has got to stand up in our courtroom and make a decision, which we've already laid out by law. he cannot make. This judge understands this. Actually, he's a magistrate. This magistrate understands this. He's very quiet. He's not saying anything. You see, so that's very interesting that they're very quiet to begin with. But someone has got to get up and put their flesh on the line, understanding they're going up against their own system. Okay, there is a process that the courts run by that must be adhered to. They've been adhering to it to some degree, but of course they've been getting away with some very, very, you know, serious situations, like of course the cases out in Nevada and the case up there in Oregon. You know, this has been these people are willing to give their lives, I guess, for this, for what they're doing. They must have something very heavy on these people that they're making these decisions and going after these people the way they are, or in an open court. And we're going to go after them with show causes. But the key thing is this. Look, the best cleanser is light, okay? That's the best cleanser. And
what is it again? I'm
best
sorry,
cleanser
I didn't
to
hear
evil,
you.
The best cleanser to evil is light. You turn on the light. You shine enough light, you know, they can't bear it. When you expose an individual's sins, let's say, in this case, you know, sins against the people, and you keep exposing it on the paper, at some point the pressure upon those people become too much for them to bear. And they got to find a place to hide. They got to get under a rock or disappear or go do something. So we're counting on the cleansing powers of light to begin with. We're also putting out the looking for critical mass, and we're approaching that right now, critical mass. The other thing, of course, is we're talking with the President of the United States, and we're looking for an Attorney General who will enforce the law. I don't think this is the guy. I think he's going to be dismissed, in my opinion, or he's going to make a turn and start doing the right thing under the pressure by the President, because we're pressuring the President now to push the Attorney General to do the right thing and send us a prosecutor. Now, we've already let the Jeff Sessions know, Attorney General Jeff Sessions know, that we have an individual who is a common lawyer, who was a prosecutor. He's got prosecuting. He was a prosecutor, so he's got a background in prosecuting. And he's also still a lawyer. He's still practicing law, but he's a common lawyer, which is very rare. You don't find many of those people. And he is willing to lead if Jeff Sessions wants to appoint a special prosecutor who could lead a group of prosecutors and train them in the common law process, which would be very easy for anyone who's a lawyer, then we can start doing some prosecuting. So we're looking for a prosecutor. When we get a prosecutor, we're going to start doing indictments.
If I don't get this out, I'm going to bust.
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
You guys have been holding me off here for 20 minutes. Listen, the people we're talking to don't understand common law or anything like that. You say, how are you going to do this? Well, number one, when we started this out, one of the first things that the chief administrative judge said is the common law has been abrogated in New York. Well, you can't abrogate the common law because the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are common law documents. Common law is guaranteed to us in the Constitution, and these judges know it. So when you know what it is and you stand on it, They have to say the Constitution is no longer in effect, and they're not willing to do that yet. Maybe in 6 months, maybe next year, but not right now. They still want us to think we're free because they need us to think that in order to function. So we're getting out there, and we're pushing the envelope. Now, the other thing is you don't have to do your indictments on a federal level. They can happen on a county level. Look, Donald Trump's bringing the top down. We're bringing the bottom up. We could be active. We're instituting four administrators to the grand jury on the county level. You know, look, if you can take your county back, the federal government has no place to put their foot. They're done. So this works both ways. If Donald Trump wants to acknowledge us, yes, he can give us a big boost up. But in the same token, people have to be active in their county courts. They got to be holding their local judges to the Constitution. This business that the common law has been abrogated is a lie from hell, and the people need to hold their feet to the fire, because like John said, that process is there. The laws are written in place that guarantee us those things. That's our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, which is really the prescription. The Bill of Rights is a Bill of Prohibitions, which tells them what they can't do. And if you don't know that and you can't hold their feet to the fires with that, then you're at a loss. So they know that. And when you bring it out in open court, even the elite will turn around and run from that, because they only operate, like John says, in darkness. So when you bring it out, you say, look, that can't be, because if that's so, then that means this is so. That what you're saying is there is no more Constitution in the United States. There is no more Bill of Rights. They're not willing to say that. So as long as you can push that envelope, they won't go there. Look, if they're a corporate oligarchy, they're an association, private association, and they're for profit. But go ahead.
Let me respond to that because, I and many other people have been and witnessed the Las Vegas trials of Navarro. We've seen her blatant bias, her blatant attacks on the Constitution. She has, I heard it with my own ears. I couldn't even believe it. I had to pinch myself. You know, that was I really hearing this correctly? You know, she says, the First Amendment and Second Amendment will not be allowed to be discussed in her court. Okay, so here's my question to you. People like Navarro, and it's not just Navarro, it's like you said, it's pervasive throughout the land. This whole idea that, we no longer have the Bill of Rights. And one example is the Bail Reform Act that took away the right to bail and gave the judge the discretion to throw somebody in pretrial prison. That's a big one right there. Speedy trial has been pretty much destroyed and undermined. So we have all these different examples, and we're seeing it actually play out with the Bundys and their defendants. What are they doing wrong? What would you do differently that they're not doing in order to get back those basic Bill of Rights?
I would not hire an attorney.
Okay.
They're working with attorneys who are officers of the court who does exactly
right.
Look, that judge needs a writ of error. That judge needs to be pulled on the carpet. Right. Immediately, those things.
Look, that judge should be indicted, and we intend on indicting that judge. We are bringing that case. We are bringing that case to right here up into the northern New York federal court here, because this is part of the subversion.
She's blatantly committed treason, and I can say that because there's no doubt, because she's got every different element of that in there. So they don't know what to do because they're sitting there wringing their hands because they don't know the Constitution. They don't know the Bill of Rights. These lawyers know the procedure that they gave them, which is outside of anything that brings us even to the common law. It brings us away from. And so, yeah, of course you get this business, just like Obama. He's supposed to be a constitutional expert, this guy that completely ignores the Constitution and the Congress and the separation of powers. Yeah, he's an expert. He knows just what he shouldn't be doing, and he does that, and the people stand there and they let him get away with it. And make no mistake about it, Navarro's getting away with it because they're letting her get away with it. Where are the people screaming that she's committing treason? Where are the people calling up and filing charges on her, making complaints that she's completely routing? Now they feel comfortable doing what they're doing because they don't live to an oath. They join an association of judges, which comes right out of the UN. It's an international association, and that's who the judges are keeping to. They are not keeping to an oath of office. Many of them don't even have an oath to the Constitution. And when they're in those courts, they feel like they've contracted with you outside of the Constitution, and they've got them believing this fiction that it's okay because you pled in their court, you did this, you did that. See, when we go into the court, we go, oh, no, we're doing an Article 3 constitutional court. The judge is a magistrate. We spell it all out. And the minute they step away from that, we go, I object. And I don't care if she does, whether they acknowledge our objection. It has to go on the record, because when you do a timely objection, goes on the record.
Yeah.
Then what you do is you leave and you put a piece of paper in. Now, you see, we have a perfect opportunity right now because we're doing exactly what the communist Van Jones told his people to do to take over this country and bring us into communism, which was we got to bring the bottom up and the top down. Well, guess what? Donald Trump is bringing the top down in a good way, and we're bringing the bottom up. We're using the Van Jones theories to take this country back. And that's
the key thing to this whole thing is taking control of a court. Okay. We have control of a court here in New York. Whether we're getting the process to go forward is another question. But at some point, that bubble has got to burst because they can't continue to break the law. Okay. Donald Trump said there'll be no peace unless there are those who will enforce the peace. Okay, and he was speaking about the military. And we've taken that in our letter to Jeff Sessions, in which we copied the president, using his words, where we said there can be no law unless there are those who are willing to enforce the law. And so we are looking for someone who is willing to enforce the law. There are some of them people out there, and there's some prosecutors out there. And at some point in time, we'll get one of those people to pick up the slack for this situation and move the process forward. But look, this is up to the Attorney General. The Attorney General recently asked Donald Trump whether he would want his resignation or not. And some of the, this kind of looks like because of some things that are going on with that ex-FBI director who just, what was his name again? Just went up to Congress?
Comey.
Right. So it may be for that, something going on there. But also the timing of our letter, the timing of our paperwork is now. And maybe he's asked also because he doesn't want to deal with what we're bringing up before him, because he's going to have to go up against the powers that be. And he knows who the powers that be are, and he understands what they can do and the dangers that he's in. So he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And he's been playing ball probably all his life. After all, he's a bar attorney. He's an ex-prosecutor. He was a senator or a congressman. So I think he was a senator, but he's into politics. He knows the game. He knows what's going on. But what we're looking for is someone who is going to step up and enforce the law. We will find a president is willing to do it, but it's going to take a prosecutor, and it's going to take the Attorney General either giving us a special prosecutor to take care of this process and working with other U.S. Attorneys who are prosecutors to lead that group to do what has to be done in the courts. One of the key things, again, like I said, we control the court at this point. We've kind of tied the magistrate up. He understands he can't make a decision. He is a traffic cop. He is an administrator. He's to move the process on. That's his job. The decision is up to the people with it, which is the trial jury. You go into the Constitution. The Constitution is very clear. You go to the Seventh Amendment, where it talks about in suits of common law, the right of the trial jury shall be preserved. And that no fact of the jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court, but according to the rules of the common law. You cannot overturn the decision of a jury, a trial jury. They've been getting away with having what's called a hung jury. Look, at the bottom line, right. These 12 people right. are given a job to go in and make a decision. And they have to make that decision. If I was the judge and I would apply the rules of the common law and they came out and said, well, we can't make a decision. Well, go back in that room until you do make a decision. And I don't care if you're there a week, a month, or a year. You're going to stay there till you make a decision. And the decision may be is we are hung and we can't go forward. So one person can hang up a jury and they got to come out and say, hey, not guilty. We got to let them go. They got to agree on that because they can't agree that, in other words, right now there would be at this point a doubt. Because someone is saying no, not guilty.
And there's no double jeopardy with that, too.
That jury, there's no such thing. Yeah, right. When they come in with another jury, that's double jeopardy. Here a man is being tried twice by the same thing. So, you see, but we've got paperwork that they are unable to respond to. These people were taught by the bar. And the last thing they were taught was Constitution. They don't know anything about the Constitution. They don't know anything, it seems, about our history of our country, our founding fathers. And we bring this stuff into the court. And when we bring the words of Jefferson, we bring the decisions of the United States Supreme Court into the court, they can't respond. So they always default. They always try to send a letter to the judge to try to have us removed for no standing without even going into the court, making a court record. And they get away with it in the courts that they control. But they don't control this court at this point in time. We're not going to let them control this court. And we're going to continue to pressure. And the key, again, is critical mass, exposure to the people. And that will happen
that
either all on its
that
own.
Is, that is the key.
Yeah, it's going to happen either all on its own, or it's going to happen because the president pays attention to us, presses the issue, gives us our prosecutors, and then critical mass will happen that way.
Look at
there's a couple of ways it could happen.
The other way this can happen is grassroots. There's nothing to stop a county from taking It's county government back. The sheriff, they're dead afraid of sheriff. He's a common law top officer. He's the highest officer, bar any federal DEA, all this baloney, you know, they come in, nobody can shut the sheriff down. So if you get a sheriff that understands the Constitution, he can also run an indictment, by the way. He can take our indictment and run it. You know what I'm saying? He can assemble a grand jury. That's grassroots. Mm-hmm. Now, that's going to, but you can't expect the sheriff to do it by himself. He's going to need the county. You're going to have to, the people are going to have to fix their county. They're going to have to elect a constitutional sheriff. They're going to have to make sure that their prosecutor understands common law and that he understands who the sheriff is so that he can run those cases or the people will run them. So this could absolutely happen on a grassroots county by county level also. It doesn't have to come from the president. I think it should be coming from both sides at once, the death of a thousand cuts. That's where you are. Now, Chrisanne Hall, she likes grassroots. Well, we are grassroots. And look, people got to get up from in front of the television and they got to start paying attention to what's going on. And they need to get involved in their local government because this whole premise that the federal runs everything, it's the most powerful government is your local government. If the local government said no, that would have been the end of the story. Like I said earlier, the federal government has no place to rest its foot if the county does not invite them in. If you don't invite them in, they have no standing to be there in the first place. And so we're our own worst enemies in that respect. So we're absolutely grassroots because if you're willing to take your county back and you want to do it county by county, and we can indict in a county, we can even indict the president if it's an issue that's in that county. You understand? The sheriff can arrest the president in his county.
My definition of critical mass is grassroots. I thought that's one of the same thing. Maybe you have a different definition. But
That is it. That is exactly what we're looking for. Look, we have tens of thousands of people that come to our website, perhaps hundreds of thousands. So we've got, we rate pretty high in the Google Analytics. And we've got over 6,000 members, okay, people willing to step up and do something. We're very active. We've got leadership in every single state of this union. We have a seal. Every state has come together as a unified state common law grand jury in whatever state they're in. Okay, they've come together to do that. They've got a seal, and they also have an address. They're registered with us, and we've come together as a whole nation. All 50 states have come together and to agree upon the unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And the purpose of the unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is only to deal with subversion against the United States of America, against the people, and against the Constitution. So that's what we're here for. And until that is actually defeated, until we deal with all of these subverts, we're not going to be able to do anything on a local level. Meanwhile, we are building administrations for the grand jury and for the trial jury. Those who will call for the grand jury or the trial jury within a county, we're building a group of four people for every county who will become administrators to take the job away from the judge and away from the prosecutor, who go in and taint the juries. The prosecutor, he can indict a ham sandwich after all. You know, look at that guy that was down in New York City that they killed, that big heavyset guy, for a code violation, cigarettes. They ended up killing this guy. And the prosecutor spent hours end on end with the grand jury until he got the grand jury to agree not to indict, okay? And so they controlled the grand jury. So no indictment came out. We sent an indictment in early on, and of course that was ignored, but nevertheless it sits in our case, and it's going to be applied at some point in time against these cops that killed this guy. But the bottom line here, again, gets back to the people getting together as one. We are coming in as the sureties of peace. That brings us to the Magna Carta, which is set off. And remember, the Magna Carta is the first grand jury that came together. 25 came together and decided to end the tyranny. And they claim themselves to be the sureties of peace, that they will do whatever's necessary to reinstate someone back to their, whatever their condition was before they were assaulted or beat up or whatever by the existing government. And so that's the purpose of the sureties of peace. So look at when the United States, when the federal courts come against an individual, you'll see the United States versus whoever it is. When the state courts go up against someone, this is the people against whoever it is, okay, in a court case. Well, in both cases, they're using the people's good name to run cases that benefit the elite or the mm-hmm. or the status quo. And they go in there and they bring in a kangaroo court in the name of the people. We're taking that back, and we are coming in as we the people, the sureties of peace, in the coming in as the grand jury. We're making the accusations and bringing the case right into the court. We need a prosecutor to prosecute, of course, and we need a referee, which is the magistrate, just to administrate the court. We're pressing now the administration. We got two defaults. We have a default against the clerk who charged us money for justice. They wanted $400. We refused to pay. They wanted it, so we had to give it to them. So they charged us money for justice. That's a crime. Okay. So we went after that person. They defaulted. We also went after the governor I mentioned earlier and the legislator and the gun laws. They defaulted. Now we're writing the default papers and we're sending it into the administrator of the court, the magistrate, and we're expecting him to sign it. Okay, and if he doesn't, he's stuck now because that's a process.
What happens if they ignore you?
Well, just think about Just think about what he does if he ignores us. Just think about what it does. We have an open court case. That has not been challenged. It's been open now for 4 or 5 months. We've been filing papers for 4 or 5 months. We have hundreds of papers in the court right now. Okay, we have all kinds of cases coming through the court. We have a judicial process. It's the law. We quote the law, which the code requires. The statutory process requires the court to acknowledge a default. They're breaking the law right there in the court. That puts the flesh of that person who is administrating on the line. He's got to either recuse himself and get out, and someone else has to come in and sign that paper. And who are they going to find? This is the problem that they have. Meanwhile, we're giving them exposure, to the president, to the attorney general, to the people, and it's sealed in a court case, and they're stuck. They don't even know what to do. They cannot. And they will default over and over and over. We will win by default constantly because they cannot answer the questions or the statements that we make. In order to do so, they would be subverts against on the record, and that's a problem. This is the pressure that must build up and build up and build up, and of course, critical mass works alongside it. We've been in this since the end of 2012. We created the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, started to build it in throughout the states. We started here in New York back at the end of 2012. It's 2017. And from that point to this point, again, we've gotten name recognition. Very few people in the liberty movement haven't heard of us. Most people have heard of us. We get a lot, like I said, we get a lot of people coming to the site, and we have a large membership. And we have people who are involved working day and night to do what has to be done. This isn't just done by a couple of people. We have lots of people across this nation working to get this process into the courts. Hey. We will succeed. We'll keep building up and building up. At some point in time, it's going to break. And the courts will be flooded with justice instead of the injustice that's flowing through it now.
What John means when he says we put that judge's flesh on the line, when he breaks the law, when he breaks the Constitution and violates the Constitution and the people's rights, we don't just let him do that. We take a case out against him and add him to the case. We sue him, and he has to answer that. And if he doesn't answer that, then that means we have no courts. If they say we're not going to go with the Constitution and we're not going to answer and we're completely gutting this process, well, then go get your gun because it's revolution time. You see, they're not willing to say that yet. I mean,
That's almost where we are.
But if Hillary would have got in, we would have been there. If Hillary Clinton was in there, yeah, it would have been over. But right now, it's not. And we need brave people to say, we're going to take you back through here. We're going to sue you personally. We're going to take criminal charges on you. And we're not asking them. We're getting a jury of his peers, and we're going to explain everything when we take him into court. We're going to say, here's what the Constitution says. Here's what court procedure says. Now you decide, jury, what do you do with this judge? Look, people are fed up. If we can get true, untainted juries, they're done. They're over, and they know it.
Well, and again, the defaults are in effect ignoring you. I mean, that's basically what they're doing is they're saying you.
Not in this court case yet. Not in this court case yet. They have not been ignored here.
Right.
And that's not true because look at, we did an IRS case, okay, and ultimately they defaulted. They really couldn't respond to anything we had to say, and we know what happened in the back room. The judge went over to the U.S. attorney, talked to him, and said, make this case disappear because there's no other way they could have gone
right.
with it.
Exactly.
Okay. And he wanted to get his flesh off the line. And that's the key. Look, we're going after the individual in charge at all times. When we have these non-judicial foreclosures, for instance, even though no judge will put their name on it, guess what? Every court has a chief judge, someone in charge. That's the guy we go after. We put his flesh on the line. And if you read our papers on the non-judicial foreclosures, which we'll be start posting up today or tomorrow, we've got, I think, six or seven cases going in right now. We've got many, many behind that coming also. But that's exactly what we're doing, is going after the chief judge in charge of that court, allowing this kind of paperwork to go through his court system, okay, which is his court, which he's in charge of,
right.
You know.
Now, we've heard a lot about the court of public opinion, which goes along the lines of critical mass and grassroots. And have you, you know, whenever a president, you know, wants to get the people behind him, he goes to the court of public opinion. You know, they go out, they put on their talks, they go walk. Is there anything like that similar to what you folks are doing in terms of you got some pretty good traction with the press? I know that probably the mainstream press is not going to back you, but have you got a way to get the word out beyond just your website? Is there a way to get the court of public opinion behind you?
Yeah, there are lots of, web-based news, outlets like yourself or blogs and, network radios over the web. We could do interviews and things of that nature, and they call us back often, and so we go out on interviews and get the message out that way. We have been sending out literally to 6,000-7,000 news outlets across the nation. We don't know if any of those people have picked up our story and ran with it on local levels, but we were faxing a lot of information out to those individuals and emailing. We've also went through all of the mainstream media, which none of them have reported on us. They stay away from us like the plague. But that's okay. At some point in time, it's got to break. And look, we have a default on the gun issue right here in New York. They defaulted, which means right now, as it stands, every gun law in New York is null and void. Right now, at this very moment, we're filing the papers with the court. We're sending a copy to the president, also to Jeff Sessions, and also to the three individuals in Congress who we spoke about. We're going to send a copy to them. And we're also going to send it out to all the news media to see what they're going to do with this particular issue. Because this is the first gun case that's come up, and they defaulted. Why did they default? They couldn't even respond to our paperwork in any way. If you read our papers, you'll understand. They can't respond. It's too powerful. But they haven't responded in any way. So that's a default, and that's a situation this magistrate's going to have to deal with.
This recording is being recorded by the NLA News. We're trying to get that up and going and moving with videos.
Yeah, we recently got onto social media, which we've never done before in the past. This past year, we really opened up to Facebook and a bunch of the other ones. We're putting in NLA News, which we're going to be able to live stream. We're going to have people, doing different stories out on the street as they break. We need some alternative. YouTube is good for what it's good for, but when you start making a difference, they start playing with you. You know, they defund you, they do this, they do that. They take your stuff down. But they've done it so much to so many people, and there's so many whistleblowers out there right now breaking their backs, and there's alternatives. They're fed up. So there's these alternative companies that are coming. Now, what's it going to take to break into YouTube? Well, I'm going to tell you what. It's not going to take too much at this point, because the more they mess with the people, the more willing they're going to be willing to go to these other. Look, I could put my stuff on YouTube, and I could put it on an alternative tube. And if YouTube keeps taking it down and the alternative tube keeps running it, what are the people going to do? They're going to go to the one that has the skinny, the story. Because what's YouTube going to have? YouTube's going to have a bunch of baloney that doesn't mean anything, right? So they're the snake eating their tail. They're their own worst enemies. By the more they try to control us and the more egregious they get, the more they fall down and they start eating their own people even. You know, the courts are doing that. They're putting, you know, the courts are so vicious that they don't have enough brains not to attack the people that are working in the courts. And that's what they're doing now because everybody is touched by this system now. So I think we are very close to this critical mass that you talk about. And I think it's going to grow exponentially. And it's a domino. When the first domino falls, they're all going to start falling one after the other. Boom, boom, boom. Look at all these people in that, in the whole Clinton Foundation and all that. And the Bushes, too. Let's not forget the Bushes. Those two guys, I think they're related. If they're not, they should be.
They're related through their elitism.
That's right.
But go ahead.
And what you're going to see is when one of them goes down, I think they all got their bags packed right now. They're all ready to hit the tarmac running, believe me, because the writing's on the wall. Because they've gotten so arrogant and so out of touch with the people, and they think that they can do whatever they want. And what they're finding out is there's roadblocks every place they go. There's stuff coming up. People, their own people are turning against them. You know, you have people like Mike Gill and George Webb. We got people coming out of the DNC that worked for Hillary, and they said, she gave me this BlackBerry, and I was doing this, that. I didn't understand. She kept them compartmentalized, and now they're all telling on her. They're turning into whistleblowers. What are they going to do? I think their whole system is crumbling, and I think you're going to see.
Well, let me ask you this. One of the things that we're seeing with the, at least with the Bundy et al, group of supporters, is just quite a bit of division happening, quite a bit of polarization, disunity. Some people believe that this disunity is being sowed by government agents, provocateurs, who go in and stir up things on purpose to get the disunity and keep them divided, you know, house divided kind of thing. Are you seeing any of that yourselves? And if you are, or do you agree that that might be actually happening with government facilitation or government, as a catalyst, or do you think it's just happening by itself?
We see that in all the liberty movements. There's once the liberty movement, whatever it may be, starts to get to a certain point to really start to make a difference. Subversion, of course, is part of the process, but also egos. They love to support. They can subvert just by bringing enough of their own. What would you call them? Agents or whatever, and try to uplift, an individual they know has a high ego. You see, one of the things we have not suffered is control by egos here at National Liberty Alliance. We've been very, very careful working with people. We try to empower people as much as possible. The key point to this whole thing is getting to a point where we empower people in every single county, because we are building grassroots processes within the courts. And the people need to take control. And ultimately, that is controlled by a vow that people take to God. And it's a written vow, but it's also a vow from heart to God, that they need to take, that they're going to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And the four individuals that for each county, some counties are like New York City would require more, but generally four is the key for every county. And these four people need to police themselves. If one of these people break their oath, being honorable, just, and merciful, one of these people break their oath, the other, it's the duty of the other three to correct the fourth. And we're teaching that part of the process, because that's what has to happen. We have to stand on righteousness and justice. And part of our strategy is God's intervention, because God could make things happen and work in the hearts of men, whether good or evil, and make things happen. So we kind of wait on him. All we have to do is the right thing. Be just, honorable, and merciful. And we're willing to give mercy to all of these individuals if they just turn around and start doing the right thing. Now, people may bring charges against them at a later point in time because they've been so evil and they've injured so many people, and they may want restitution. And then the local you know, grand juries will have to assist in dealing with that process, either giving an indictment or possibly working out a solution. And that's part of the other process. Look, this is not about putting people in jail. This is about really restoring the people who are injured, because that's what common law is all about, okay, is to restore injured people and to prevent, you know, people from, especially government, abusing the people. That's what common law is about. And so our jails are filled with people who don't really belong there. Most of them are in there for code violations, codes that they have no authority or power to write or enforce. We, the people, never gave them the power to write statutes to control our behavior. That's our job. It's between us and God. And that's a mature thought that people have to grab hold of and understand. We have to teach our children. They're responsible for their own action. And common law could be much more harsher than the statutory process. If someone violates an individual, you know, they have to pay back and restore this individual sevenfold or fourfold, whatever the jury feels is necessary. But look, at jail is the last resource. You know, only violent people belong in jail, and there's a process to deal with them in common law also. But look, we have to get law and order back, and it's got to be on the grassroots. And it's more than a mind change; it's also a heart change, because it's going to require the right heart in order for, you know, God to give us that blessing and give us liberty. Remember, the Constitution was written ultimately concerning the
Did we lose John? Hello. Lost his audio.
In the interim here, let me make a comment and ask a question. Okay. I was a direct casualty of that division out there. I've been involved in this since Bunkerville. But anyway, I was out there. I could only spend one morning in that court. I had to get out of there. It was just so repugnant to me. And the solution to that division out there is, as I see it, you need to get that trial in the records in our case in New York. And my question is this: how close are we to get Navarro and the judges out there in this filed in this court case, that their subversion?
Well, we are right there right now. It's a matter of putting the papers together. We have I've got a lot of stuff put together ready to file up onto our page, which will be evidence, and we have to then file it in the courts. So once we put all that evidence up, we'll be writing the papers, and it could be another couple of weeks. It could be less. We're dealing with a lot of paperwork. We have 30 habeas corpuses we have to get up there. Amongst those habeas corpuses are the habeas corpuses we did for those people out in Nevada, and we did habeas corpuses for those in Oregon. We want to enforce them and put the judge's flesh on the line here. By what authority did they not act? By what authority did they conceal? By what authority did they remove? All of these are statutes, lawful statutes. They cannot remove or conceal a document. It could be 20 years in jail for concealing a document, depending on the intention. If a judge is involved, you know, forcing another person like a clerk to break the law, it's 20 years in jail statutorily for that judge. Okay, and that is a proper statute. You see, government is to write statutes to control themselves. That's part of the process. We've empowered them with that, but we've never empowered them with the process of writing statutes to control we the people. But in any event, we've got about 30 habeas corpuses that we need to get up in there that have been filed and ignored, either concealed or removed. We have a bunch of foreclosures that we're working on right now. And like I said, 7 are going up. There's a few others going up. We should catch up this week, hopefully. And this week we'll be filing all these papers, getting all of the information into the court. I'd like to file almost immediately something for the assassination of Lavoie Finnegan. We've got all the evidence on that. We need to file it into the courts, and we need to write the papers. And we need to send this to the president, and again to Jeff Sessions and to the three congressmen, and again to the news media. Eventually, they've got to pick up on us. But the work that we're doing, when people understand how we're approaching this, We're using the system of common law that is still part of this nation, part of the judicial process that they cannot get rid of. You know, they may make a statement here or there, but they cannot get rid of it. The Seventh Amendment prevents it. The right of due process, the Fifth Amendment, prevents it. They must give it. Look at habeas corpus is the process you use when the Fifth Amendment isn't being applied. And now that's not even working. That's how bad these the court system is. There is no due process in our courts, and there is no fair hearing. There is no tribunal. All tribunals are controlled either by the judge or the prosecutor.
We're very, very, very aware of that, and that leads me to my follow-up question. You know, getting back to this whole concept of critical mass, you know, what I've seen within the Bundy movement is a lot of sincere people, a lot of Christians, a lot of religious people, you know, doing lots of praying and talking about God and reading scriptures, and all that's good because you can tell their heart is right. But they're powerless, they're teethless. And
right.
My question to you, let me finish my question. My question to you is, are you starting to see some people from inside the system wake up and come over? Some people who are not corrupt, who are not taken in by the elites, you know, people who have power, who are decision makers, more than just, you know, Trey Gowdy and Chaffetz, who, by the way, Chaffetz leaving. He had so many death threats against him, and I think they're death threats coming from the elite. That's why he's getting out. But how do we get, you know, FBI agents? How do we get people who have woken up and who have become whistleblowers to come in and join, you know, your organization or organizations similar to that? So we start getting critical mass with people who have more than just prayers at their disposal.
Well, they already are. We've had FBI agents tell us that they support us. They've called them out against us, and they've come in and they've investigated us, and they said, we like what you're doing. So there are good guys in here. We even have people in the courts, in the local courts when we go in, that respect our process. They realize that we are doing something that is different, that is very respectful, and they like it because it's for the people. So they're there, but it's very intangible to actually give you a number because you don't know. You know what I mean? Until you get to critical mass.
There is a principle. There is a principle in the Bible, okay, standing up on righteousness where 100 will flee from one, okay? And that means that God is working in the hearts of both the good and the evil. In other words, putting the fear of himself in the evil so that they run and they start running, you know, to hide under rocks, to remove themselves. But that's what we need to count on. You see, we have to act in faith. We only have to do the right thing because justice will always prevail in the long run. You know, it's the race between the tortoise and the hare, okay? It's always the same thing. It looks like the hare is going to win, but at the end of the day, the tortoise crosses that line first. And with God, God is slow in his anger, and he's slow in his justice, but it's going to come. And we do know that this world has gotten so evil. Look at this elite is about to take over the whole world. Now I'm starting to see it crumble. I don't think that they could possibly pull it off anymore. They're starting to fall apart. There are certain events that have happened that they never planned on, and I think Donald Trump is one of those events. I mean, he is just taking down the whole system that took them, you know, decades to build, and he's taking them down in hours and in days. Okay, we have the pressure that we're putting on. Believe me, the federal courts, all 94 federal district courts, all federal judges know about the common law grand jury here operating through this process right here, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. They all know of us. They're all silent about us. Now, how many of those people are ready to make the move in the right direction at some point in time? We have no clue. But at some point, you know, the bubble has got to burst. And I believe, again, as long as we continue to do things honorable, with just and with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, we do things in that process. Just do the right thing, say the right thing, enforce the right things. God's going to bless that because God is part of this whole process. The problem with a lot of the people that are, you know, have a different, you know, liberty groups or liberty movements or movements because of what's going on in the court. They're ignorant to what how things work. They're ignorant to who we are and what we're doing. And that's one of the problems that they have. Also, like I mentioned before, egos will rise their head. They've tried rising their head. We've had about three or four incidents in National Liberty Alliance, and we were able to catch it early and get rid of these problematic people who are really there egotistically in order to control people. For instance,
they might be infiltrators. I truly believe, I didn't used to, but I'm very paranoid now about infiltrators, paid infiltrators.
Oh, absolutely. We've exposed them. We've exposed them. Absolutely.
And it's not so much what they can do, but it's who they can subvert when they come in. They come in and they watch things, and they don't necessarily take a leadership role, but they'll get close to a leader, and they'll subvert him, and they'll poison him. And we've seen it. And we've even taken down whole sections of our people, telling them you can't do what you're doing, and you need to leave, and you're going to end up in jail if you keep doing it. And lo and behold, within a year, they were in jail. We predicted it. We gave disclaimers. We kicked them out. I mean, they would have loved to get them while they were still NLA members, because then they could put that wrong that they were doing on the whole group. You know, you see? So you spent all that time subverting them in order to sully our name, and thank God we're a close enough knit group that we caught it before they were able to do that. I mean, somehow
they were able to do it in the, you know, colonial days. Somehow they were able to have a constitutional convention and pull together many divisive voices to come up with the Constitution. And I think everybody acknowledges that God was the common denominator that made that all possible. And I think you guys are saying the same thing, that God is the common denominator. We don't act with God, if everybody's going to go off on their egos, or we're going to listen to paid infiltrators, it's not going to work. And we're going to go down the tube. But if they could do it 240 years ago, we can do it again. That's how I look at it.
Bear in mind, we made a covenant with God through the Declaration of Independence. That's where we called upon God. Okay, let me read this, just a couple of verses, you know. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to pursue these rights of governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government. Okay, so this whole thing, and just the beginning of the declaration, we have here. Talks about the separation of equal stations to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitles them. So right there, the Declaration of Independence called upon God to be ruled by God. We are a nation that is to be ruled by God, because we're to be ruled by justice in the courts of justice. That's the ultimate process. Because if the courts are just, your government will be just, because they won't be able to break the constitutional oaths that they've taken. Okay, they won't be able to break and do the wrong thing and go up against the Constitution. They won't be able to break the law or take any of this funny money from the special interest groups, because they'd all be put in jail. All that is unjust. They'd be warned and indicted and dealt with by the people. So the Constitution then settled the whole thing in a preamble, talking about the purpose of government is to secure the blessings of liberty. Okay, so there's the contract. We are a nation in contract with God. And one of the reasons I think that we're going through all of this problems that we have is because we forgot that. And we're trying to remind the people of where we came from and who we really are and what we must do. We cannot defeat evil. National Liberty Alliance cannot defeat evil. We can only do the right thing by wearing the armor of God. That's to do the righteous thing, honor, justice, and mercy. That's all we can do. And then we depend on God to take care of the rest. This is his battle. This is his war. All we need to do is have the armor on and do the right thing. And that is a major part of who and what we are. And this is really, reaching. The people are responding to this kind of a message. And they need to, because this is the only one that's going to save this nation.
Right.
And, you know, and Lauren, I want to say something. One of the problems we had in the beginning of this endeavor is that people have short attention spans. If you can't get your message out in 15 seconds, they don't want to hear it. They've been taught not to read. We've had
we're dealing with that problem at Readout News.
It's so hard. Look, you can't get this story out in 5 minutes. It requires more. But what we've discovered is, we can use the NLA News. We can throw up 15, 20-second spots. We could do little one-minute videos in order to catch their attention. And that's what we're going to do from now on. We're going to institute that. The other thing is these liberty groups, everybody's been taught for instant gratification. They have no patience. They have no understanding because they want something done yesterday. It didn't happen from yesterday. It happened from 150 years ago to get to this point. You're not going to fix it in a day. However, when we ask them to go into courts and sit there and then give us affidavits, affidavits are so powerful and they're so scared of them, and we can't get them to get together to send us affidavits to put in this case. They're out there. We're not out there. You know, I understand they're out there with their signs and they're doing all that stuff and they're protesting, and that has its place, but it's not as strong as giving us an affidavit to put in the case. See, they think that
what I meant by teethless. Those rallies and the signs are really just an outlet for their frustration. Right. But they really have very little. I mean, here's how I look at it. When I saw it, I watched the guards there, the Las Vegas courthouse, and they had smiles on their face. They couldn't be happier for those people to be out there on the sidewalk with their signs. That's exactly where they wanted them to be. Right. And that's and you know, Navarro was happy. Everybody was happy because they're teethless. They're impotent.
They wouldn't be happy.
That raised a little bit of awareness by people driving by, but that's extremely minimal. So you're exactly right. It needs to be instead of doing stuff like that, we need to be doing something that really is meaningful. And affidavits and other things of that nature are what we need to be focusing on.
But remember, that does play a role because it gets attention and it gets exposure. So it does play a role.
They need direction. Look, if they were out there waving our court case or an affidavit against Navarro saying, we're going to put this in the case, they'd be death afraid of them out there. You see, they have no teeth. We're their teeth, and they don't appreciate it. They don't understand it. They don't know what the process is. They don't understand
the teeth. The affidavit. It's not the sign. I mean, yes, it might raise some public awareness. I can see some value in that. But it has absolutely no effect on what's actually happening in the court.
Well, my point is they're not giving them to us. We need them, and they're there, and they're
okay. So what do we need to do to get affidavits to you? Because I was there for a few days. I could write an affidavit. I've got my notes. I watched the abhorrent behavior of the prosecutors in Navarro. I've got it written down. I've got the time that she made a comment that was totally inappropriate. How do we go about doing these affidavits?
Well, first of all, what you need to do, if you don't know how to do an affidavit, you have to go on our site, and we have an affidavit outline.
Let me cover that part. Yep. You know, we do have a page. I want to make this more prominent. As a matter of fact, from this discussion, I'm realizing we need to make it more prominent, more easy to find. Right now, we're doing a lot of non-judicial foreclosures, and we're probably going to get back to habeas corpuses again. But on our non-judicial foreclosure page, which if you go to grand jury, highlight grand jury, and come down to non-judicial foreclosure, you'll see a link here where you can click on how to write an affidavit, okay? But basically, an affidavit is very simple. We give the basic, intro to the affidavit, you know, I, so on and so forth, and swear, and blah, blah, blah. And in the end, we have the notary, where the notary is to sign. And you sign your name in front of a notary. But basically, in between, all we want is the story, the facts. Unfortunately, we get a lot of people who give us affidavits, but they try to case inside the affidavit. They maybe get into the man on the land stuff, trying to use certain language. They may start bringing in court cases. So they start to try the case. So we try to communicate with these people to tell them, look, all you need to do is tell the story as if you were telling your neighbor or friend what happened to you.
Right.
And give the dates and times on or about a certain date at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That's good enough. And then tell your story what happened. And then once you get it into that, we file it in the court. that becomes fact in a court of law until it gets rebutted. And they're not going to rebut any of this stuff. And that's another problem they have. They can't rebut it.
Okay. And you send it to us.
Send it to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Through.
You know, I'm going to, if you
right
wait
on the website.
Yeah, look it. If you wait till tomorrow at the end of the day, either today or tomorrow, I will post a page up for affidavits. I'm not sure exactly where I'll be. It will probably make it prominent on the front page. You know, file if you've been injured or whatever, abused by the courts or by the prison system, and you want to file an affidavit in our case to become part of our case, click here. Something like that. We'll put it prominently on the front page
or if you witness
within the first few paragraphs.
If you're a witness to the law being broken in the trial, because those all, especially one of the cases that we have in the court. We need affidavits for them. We want to bury them in affidavits is what we want to do.
Okay. Well, that's a message we could get out to our supporters, you know, both on my group page as well as Redoubt News. We can get that word out to start coming up with some affidavits. They do have to be notarized, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and give us at least until the end of the day tomorrow to get this up there. I'm already looking at the page we have, but it's good for where the non-judicial foreclosures. But I want to do something more prominent on the front page so you can find it easily. And anybody who comes out onto our website will find it very quickly. Matter of fact, we may even put it on the right side also. It'll be on every page. You know, but we'll put something up. It's already written, all the information that we need to put together as far as, you know, instructions on how to write an affidavit. It's just a matter of making the link and getting that paper available in a PDF form for people to download and fill up.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I only have one more question, and it goes back to, again, Nevada. When I was there, I had the opportunity to go to the prison and meet with Ryan Bundy and also Dave Bundy. Ammon refused. I had tried to see him, but he refused because of the position he's taken on strip searches. What I'm leading to is you had mentioned earlier that the problem that's happening in the Nevada trials is they count on these attorneys, defense attorneys who are really officers of the court. They're worried about their careers. They're worried about having to appear before that judge or in that court.
They
some
are threatened.
Case.
They are directly
and so,
threatened.
So the point is, and Ryan is aware of that. Ryan's extremely astute. Ryan is very knowledgeable. He has spent his life studying the Constitution. His wife, Angie, complained to me that they went to every single constitutionally related seminar or workshop or class that they can go to throughout their marriage. And so that's why he's self-represented right now. But the problem is that the jail doesn't let him represent himself. I mean, they have so much control over him in terms of what can come in and out of the prison. They will not let those USB, what do they call them, thumb drives. You know, when he wants to get some documents, they won't let him in, you know. Or, you know, if somebody comes to talk to him as a counsel, which he has a right to counsel, even though he's representing himself, the counsel has to go through a strip search, and they don't want to go through a strip search, so they stay away. And my point is the whole idea behind pretrial detention is that very thing, to suppress you and to oppress you, to keep you from having an effective defense that hampers your defense. What do we do for somebody like Ryan, who has chosen to go that route, not use the officers of the court, but they're completely suppressing him?
Well, look at that. That is a problem. We want to try to expose that in the court case that we're doing and going after these judges, and hopefully that'll deter other judges from doing that. Again, if we get an indictment on a judge, it will deter all judges because we will indict anyone who breaks their oath to the Constitution. Of course, you don't indict first. You know, you make a connection with that individual and you let them know that they're violating their oath and that they need to fix this problem by their, you know, not acting this way or doing this anymore, and repent it. And if they don't, then we're going to take them into consideration for indictment. And that's how you deal with that from our perspective. But we're not in that position to be able to – we're just moving into that position now, as a matter of fact. But, yeah, look at – these people shouldn't even be in jail in the first place. First of all, they broke the law. But even if the court had a case against them, even if this court case – this court case, let's say it had a case against these people, they still shouldn't be sitting in jail in order to – they should be able – they should be out preparing for their case to defend themselves and take care of whatever business they have to take care of. But in – you're right, in jail, that's part of the process to prevent them from getting counsel, to prevent them from getting access to documents and information and prevent them from studying. All of that has taken place in the federal prison.
Well, they're breaking their own statutes, John, because there are laws that they're supposed to supply computers and
this
and that.
Absolutely, but they don't.
And they have
don't
these
get anything.
Private for-profit prisons that don't supply the stuff, and nobody's holding their feet to the fire. So again, you know, whatever agency is supposed to make sure that the prison is administering to the prisoners, and of course that got to be a big thing in the 70s and 80s. Everybody got sick of prisoners. Like, oh, well, they go to jail, they get an education. Well, that ain't happening no more, is it?
But how about affidavits? Ryan could
write. Well, that's what I was going to say. I was getting to that. The fact is we need people that have knowledge of that and the incident of that. Look, at when he says, I need a pencil, and they won't give him a pencil, or he needs to go to the law library and they don't let him, we need an affidavit on that, whether he does it and tells it to his wife. And yeah, maybe they're going to torture him for it, but guess what? Somebody has to do it, and they have to get it out. And then that affidavit can be put in a case in that local municipality and say, look, it, you need to pull this prison's charter because they're not going by the rules. And if they got a bunch of affidavits that they're abusing these prisoners, somebody's going to come down and close them. They're going to lose profit. That's all they understand. So whatever agency is charged with making sure that these prisoners are supposed to get this stuff, where are they? Give us affidavits, and we'll sue them. We'll take it to court, and we'll sue them. That's the only thing they understand.
Can I add something here?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The affidavit, I even had a lawyer tell me within the last week, affidavits mean nothing in court. They're not evidence. You never use them. They're no good. Yes, they're no good in the statutory courts that we're talking about where there's corruption. They do mean something when Ryan submits this as evidence. It's accepted, and then he testifies to them right there in a common law Article III court. The jury is the decision maker, and those affidavits will be gold.
Well, yeah, if he can even get the judge to allow it to be admitted. See, what I witnessed.
Well, that's why we have a court without a judge.
Carl's court was she just shut everything down. I mean, everything the prosecution wanted, hundreds and hundreds of admissions of evidence were granted by her, by the prosecution, you know, volumes and volumes. When the defense tried to admit something, she shut it down. She said, no, it's not relevant, or it's not going to be helpful to the jury. I mean, even though it was extremely relevant and extremely helpful to the jury, she just shut it down. And, you know, like you say, why aren't these defense attorneys filing objections? Because they fear for their careers, they fear for their life.
Right.
That's why they're not filing objections.
They're threatened. Look at them. In a lot of these cases, everybody knows exactly how the end is going to be. It's already decided. You know, it's an unwritten thing, and they know. What's going to end going to be on, and the lawyers are just in it for the money ultimately, because they continue to play the game and they see the corruption, but they don't do nothing about it. They play the game, participate. But look,
$100 a day, what they're receiving as a government-appointed attorney.
Here's the facts in any court of law. Obviously, these are not courts of law, but nevertheless, any court system that's just. The fact of the matter is that a sworn statement stands as truth in a court of law, period. Unless it's rebutted, it stands as truth. And then if it's rebutted, then you look for the inconsistency to find out who's lying, because that is seen through the cross-examinations. You know, any good detective will tell you, you know, they really solve their cases by looking for contradictions. Wait a second, your buddy said this and you just said that. Well, what happened there? You know, and then, you know, then the story changes again and again. You start to see the truth. It exposes itself. You see, you just put the light on it and evil is exposed. So Affidavits is important, and in any court case, we do everything with affidavits in all court cases. But the key again is putting the flesh. If there's a judge involved, you got to put his flesh on the line, and you got to get rid of that judge. You got to move your case into a court of record, which is a trial by jury. And you got to remove the judge from involvement altogether. And that's what we've done. We wrote memorandums in order to control the judge. We wrote memorandums in order to control the process of the court. We wrote memorandums in order for them to understand that we're under the common law, and this is going to be jury trials. All of this was the prerequisite work that was necessary in order to start filing all these papers. And before that, we had filed about 19 documents in all 94 federal district courts concerning the subversion within our government or at every level of government. And what was going on. So all of this, we took a year to get all those papers and to serve all those papers on every federal district judge, every state judge, every court in on the federal level. And we also filed it for Congress. All of government has been exposed to what we're doing. And then we took all those papers that we had been serving for a year and filed them as evidence inside this court case.
Yeah.
They can't argue. They cannot make an argument in our court. They can only ignore us, and they can only ignore us for so long. At some point, the dam has got to burst.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, that's why I think we need the court of public opinion on our side.
Absolutely.
I'm glad to hear that you're moving that direction. So, yeah, that's all I've got.
Okay, gentlemen, we've been here over an hour and a half. I'm gonna try to segment this down in maybe four or five parts. Our initial goal of the NLA News is to have short 5-10 minute chunks, and y'all do me a favor in the future. Like I say, Lauren, you and Sherry, Redoubt News is welcome here anytime. And if you got a question, you just get a hold of somebody here. But the favor is this: let's try to just limit it to one question and try to limit it to a 5 or 10 minute chunk, and we just get piece by piece. I'm gonna click the recorder off, so